Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan Newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
And if you have his subscription newsletter, he writes what you read as well. Or if you also enjoy Sports Illustrated and Baseball America, you can enjoy the work of baseball analyst Joe Sheehan, who is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan and who joins us on the Al Pamati Ford Hotline. Al Pamati Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Joe, hello.
Hey, what's going on, Dan?
Well, what's going on here is the matchup last night between Jake Arrieta and Yu Darvish and a controversial call on a check swing by Andrew McCutchen and Joe Maddon calling for technology to allow us to objectively figure out what a swing is. And I think we've come to the conclusion that trying to do that would lead to all kinds of unintended consequences that would make for a complete mess.
Well, you'd have seven-hour baseball games.
We already do.
I mean, you're just not. I'm a big believer in replay. I think that it's been implemented badly in baseball, and there's always been a pretty obvious solution: a fifth umpire in the booth creates umpire jobs, takes the job away from the guys on the field. I've never understood why they haven't implemented it that way. I think there's an idea that the guys on the field have to, because the whole principle is, well, you have to. The call on the field is the guiding principle, and the guiding principle should be what actually happened. But to get back to what Maddon's saying here, you're never going to be able to get to a straight answer on a check swing. It's a judgment call in the moment. Personally, I feel like 99% of replays make it look like the batter swings. I've always kind of felt it though, but I don't think this is an area where replay is actually going to help.
Looking through that game last night, Yu Darvish, who we talked about for, well, let's be honest, for weeks now, has had one of his better starts as a Cub. That's a couple in a row that didn't look so terrible. Are you starting to believe in turnaround as potential for him? I know you've been a little higher on Yu Darvish than most, at least for the bulk of a season.
Even when Yu Darvish pitches well, it's a hard watch.
Yeah,
I think last night was in that same category. This is just who he's going to be now. He's going to be this guy who's going to still strike out 12-13% of the batters he faces. It's going to be a lot of deep counts. You know, how do the 3-2 pitches fall in a given night? And last night he was able to get some strikeouts, kind of avoid some of the walks. So it's two starts in a row now, which he's walked fewer than four batters, which, I mean, that's a really low bar, but he's clearing it. I still think you're looking at him as a three. And a three with pretty high variance. He's going to have nights. He's going to have innings where he looks like the Yu Darvish of 2011. But I just don't think the command, particularly the secondaries, is ever coming back to allow him to be the number one, number two that he was in his heyday with the Rangers.
Another blown save for the Cubs. It puts them on an ignominious list of teams that have given away some games late. It's something you can fix. Theo Epstein has said, because of the new, earlier, hard deadline, that we're already getting to the point where some of these deals are going to start to be made. I saw Anthony Swarzak was on the move just yesterday, and Theo even mentioned the teams might be shoring up some of their AAA crops of players for guys later on who might help a roster as we get into the dog days. What do you foresee in the immediate future on the horizon for the trade market generally?
I keep waiting for Farhan Zaidi to make a move. He's had that job now for 8 months. Madison Bumgarner's still a Giant. Will Smith is still a Giant. But, they've fallen into last in the West. They were never expected to contend, but, you kind of always – teams always need to see it from themselves, right? It's hard when you've had the decade that the Giants have had to go into a season thinking you're going to be a seller. But, with –
was about 10 weeks to the trade deadline now. You look at Will Smith as an impending free agent. You look at Mark Melancon with a year and a half to go on that deal. They've built some good younger relievers they can go with in Trevor Gods and Reyes Barata, so they can trade veterans like Smith, Dyson, Nick Watson, and still have an effective bullpen. So I think they're going to run the trade deadline, especially with the emphasis on relievers. What are we, 5 years into this era? You go back really to the 2015 Royals, right, where a team just kind of basically went to the postseason and said, we're just going to ride our bullpen forever. I think that's where teams now say, hey, look, we just want to get to July and then figure out what our bullpen's going to look like. You know, Theo makes a good point here. Teams aren't going to be able to wait until the middle of August anymore. So maybe the Swarzak deal is an early effect of the elimination of the August trade deadline, where teams are going to have to act earlier and earlier, even on minor pickups like an Anthony Swarzak.
Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan, as we do every Tuesday at 10. He is at @Joe_Sheehan on Twitter, Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, all the smart places where baseball's written. It's the Bernstein McKnight Show. Joe, do you think that when the MLB draft ends on the 5th of June, and we get like the next day Craig Kimbrell sign and Dallas Keuchel sign, that the union will make as big a stink about those signings because teams won't have to give up draft picks as they've made about guys like Chris Bryant or potential prospects coming up like right after their 12 days of service time elapse and they get the extra year of control?
They're still a union?
Wow.
Wow, you hear these things. You hear these rumors. I thought they disbanded. I'm surprised. I a sternly worded press release from Tony Clark's office. Well, that's sure gonna change things. Look, the MLBPA has let itself get run over for about a decade now, and the next chance they're going to have to show themselves to be a union in the spirit of Marvin Miller, in the spirit of Don Fehr, is going to be the 2020-21 negotiations. All of these interim possible solutions are just posturing. You make your bones as a union at the CBA. So whatever they do, whatever, like I said, sterling worded press release comes out after Kimbrell and Keuchel sign, you know, you guys had the chance to do this in 2016. You guys have steadily given away the value of players on the market by allowing a soft cap in the luxury tax, by allowing basically letting teams be penalized for signing free agents. Mm. So call me in 2020-21, you know, when the negotiations start, when you guys sit and say, we're going to reverse these trends. What happens in the middle of June doesn't tell me anything about the union.
You wrote about the disappearing triple. What's happening?
It's a combination of factors. The biggest one being the fact that there's taking any 90 feet on a baseball field is less valuable than it was 20, 30, 50, 100 years ago because of disappearing single. When strikeout rates are above 23-24%, and when singles are harder than ever to come by, the value of going from second to third doesn't matter as much. So it's just a risk management thing as much as anything else. I was thinking about that watching Descalzo go second to third last night. Yep. on the triple, on the quote triple, Herrera and McCutcheon doing their little Alfonso Gaston act out in left center. But there's it's some of that. Some of it's ballparks. I mean, ballparks are just smaller than they were, you know, two or three generations ago. Outfielders are better, so it's a lot of little things coming into it. But really, it's mostly just going second to third isn't worth the risk anymore when the next guy isn't likely to hit a single and is likely to hit a strikeout or a pop up that isn't going to move you up anyway.
I also wondered about scouting for speed, where in the 70s and the big carpeted ballparks, the cookie cutter parks, and you had the typical, you know, pigeon-toed Cardinals outfielder, and everybody ran the 60, and that was the most important thing, that now speed just doesn't matter as much. It's great to have it. You'd rather have it than not, but it's not necessarily a deal-breaker if somebody could still bash a baseball.
Right. In addition to the dimensions, of course, the disappearance of turf. There's certainly no turf like there was in, you know, we grew up where they basically just laid a green carpet on a bank of concrete, and you were basically playing like you did. I mean, I grew up playing on concrete and asphalt here in the city, and that was kind of baseball you were playing. That there was a 20-year period where that was the style of play. And yeah, you're right. Speed was a much different, much bigger part of the game then. I think teams still want to see speed because it's part of an athleticism package. Players who are good and have speed tend to age better than players who are good and don't have speed. Speed-only players, your Tom Goodwins, your Curtis Goodwin, I guess, too, your Corey Pattersons, those guys will wash out quickly. But players who are fast and do other things age better. So speed is still important, but it, applied speed as you know, comes to steals and extra bases and playing the outfield isn't as important as it used to be.
Maybe forcing you into a choice on Lucas Giolito's season isn't the best way around it, but is it better to look at Lucas this year as prospect who's finally making good or guy who had to remake everything about himself?
Can I split the difference?
Yeah, you can.
You kind of baked it into the question there, I know, but we talk about a guy who's really finding command within the zone. I mean, some of the numbers are a little, I mean, the three homers is not going to sustain, but that huge drop in the walk rate's real. And again, I think we have talked about this before. We expect guys to come to the majors now and dominate. You know, Walker Buehler and Jack Flaherty last year. But it's more likely that a pitcher is going to go through what Giolito's gone through, both with the injuries and then, you know, having the consolidation year last year where he made 32 starts. They weren't very good, but he made, stayed in the rotation, made 32 starts. I think this is a step forward. I think who he is probably, I think he takes some of that upside off. I'm not sure we can project a Gio to be a number one, even a high number two. But, you know, if he's a 2-3, for the next few years, if he turns into, having a decent comp here. I'm sorry, guys. I'm blanking on might be a good comp here, but somebody who provides you those 32 starts as an ERA about 3.5 in that park, it's going to be maybe 3.6, 3.7, but he gives you the innings, he gives you the starts. But you always are going to want to try to find somebody, whether in the market or through development, who's going to be your true number one, whether that's Kopech or going out this winter and signing Gerrit Cole or somebody. Giolito, I think, is a 2 on a good team, not a 1.
I'm looking at the slash line of Cody Bellinger at 405, 485, 791 with a WRC plus of 233. Per Fangraphs, he is worth 4.2 wins above replacement already here on May 21st. Was this a sample size that is raising eyebrows at this point? Hot start is one thing, but it's already been 194 plate appearances of this, Joe.
And there's a skill change as well. He's gotten much better at getting the bat to the ball. The strikeout rate, excuse me, guys, has dropped considerably. Briefly, he had more walks than strikeouts. He doesn't at this point, but he was in that range now. The power's always been there. But there's always been the question of, you know, was he going to get the bat the ball enough to, is he going to be a 270 hitter or a 330 hitter? And Bellinger, nobody's a 405 hitter. You know, Tony Gwynn retired a long time ago. He passed away. But does this mean that Bellinger might actually be a 300, 310 hitter with all of the power that he brings to the game and with being a good defensive first baseman? Yeah, I think that's who he's going to end up being now. And again, you know, he's just 23. We used to talk, we don't talk about it as much anymore because aging curves have changed over the last 25 years. But we used to talk about guys coming to the majors young and the big step they could take at age 23. And you go through history, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, you see a lot of these guys have these big steps forward at 23. I want to say Griffey Jr. had his first big year at 23 and other guys. Bellinger's taking that step forward this year. But, I mean, yeah, nobody's a 1,200 OPS hitter. But is Clay Bellinger's improvement for real? Absolutely.
Joe, as always, we appreciate it. Look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That is Joe Sheehan, our regular baseball expert.
Taking digs at the union on the way out.
Always does. That's consistent.
Well-deserved.
We're going to talk to Patrick Mooney in just a couple minutes. He's got all the latest on what is going to be happening with your Cubs viewing habits. I mean, your life's going to change a little bit. Things are going to be very different, and you don't want to be like Grandma and Grandpa. Where's the Cubs game? Hey, call the score. They know where the Cubs game is. This will help get you out ahead of things. Also, the Bears have released the next tranche of their list.
They chummed Dan's waters.
Yes, they have. But they have given us now, we're 251, I believe. We have the second
You're
quarter.
You're screaming and yelling during breaks.
Yes.
I haven't seen you like this since actual Bears games.
Because there's... I'm sorry. I'm falling for it. I'm taking the bait and I'm doing it joyfully. This segment brought to you by the Chicago Bears. Don't miss your chance to hang out with the Chicago Bears at Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through the 9th in Rosemont. Get free autographs and photos. See one-of-a-kind panels with the 2019 Bears Hall of Famers and other alumni together on stage. Weekend passes are still available. Visit chicagobears.com for tickets. Patrick Mooney will give us the latest details on a new sports channel coming to Chicago television. You've got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I think, listen, we've already committed that Len and JD are going to be in the booth. So for the fan who wants the traditional broadcast that feels a lot like what they're saying today, that's clearly going to happen. The question is, do you have a second booth, for instance? Do you have the same feed from the same trucks, but have a little different call of the game? Maybe that might be angled a little towards the sports betting market or the statistic market.
That was some insight from Cubs President of Business Operations Crane Kenny when he sat down with us when we were down in Mesa. And now we're finding out more about the marquee network in this operation that is going to be a partnership between Sinclair Group, that has now purchased the Fox Regional Sports Networks, and the Cubs are going to be the beneficiaries of some of that muscle as well. Patrick Mooney of The Athletic, who is on Twitter at PJ_Mooney, is here to tell us all about it. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. It's good stuff. A lot of detail in there, Patrick. So do we know, what do we know now about, let's just start off with, how are we going to pay for this? How am I going to pay for it? How are you going to pay for it? What's going to pay for it?
In an ideal world for the Cubs, they'll get carriage on all the basic cable systems throughout Chicago, and you would just pay for it as part of the normal cable bundle that you already subscribe to, or if you use some of these over-the-top devices. I know it sounds like different and confusing, but at its core, what the Cubs ultimately want is something that just kind of mimics what NBC Sports Chicago kind of already is. It's just a matter of kind of Sinclair and the Cubs coming together and hammering out all these agreements with places like Comcast and RCN, kind of those traditional cable distributors.
Has that always been their desire as it pertains to the marquee network, or was that reachable because of some of these Fox RSNs that came into the fold here the last couple of weeks?
That's a good question, Connor. I think we've, I don't know how many Cubs conventions I've sat through, but I've wasted a lot of Saturdays in January in a hotel ballroom. And when the Cubs kept talking about this, it sounded super novel and different and our own channel. And then they would also kind of hedge that by saying, we're going to do it with a partner. And obviously, if they did it with, say, just a private equity firm and built something from scratch, that would be really different, super risky. Whereas this, they just want more control over kind of really everything. And they obviously want to make more money. And they certainly talked with NBC and about extending their current agreement with the Bulls and Blackhawks and White Sox. And this is kind of what they came to. And kind of throughout our reporting, that piece, the Sinclair old Fox RSNs, that will give the Cubs a lot just in terms of like a baseline of expertise and relationships and just the stuff like, you know, the graphics you see on TV. It's not like the Cubs have to design that from scratch or all of a sudden talk to, I don't know, whatever production company X that rents out the trucks. They can now kind of do that in bulk, and there'll be a lot of kind of back-of-the-office infrastructure and technical know-how to get this off the ground by next February. I mean, we've got a lot to do between now and then.
I wonder what the tone of the presentation is going to be, because had they owned it like the Yes Network, when it's all them and they could have, you know, hire all their people, pay their people to sort of be brand ambassadors, for lack of a better term. If the on-air people and off-air, everybody is a Sinclair employee, what do the Cubs surrender, if anything, in editorial control as far as how they're covered, what level of objectivity there might be in reporting on them?
Well, I'm pretty sure the Yankees have always had partners. Off the top of my head, I can't remember now whether it was Fox or Amazon. They obviously bought back a huge piece of it as part of that Sinclair-Fox deal. But my understanding is that Len and JD, it's unclear whether they would remain Cubs employees or not. But Crane reiterated yesterday what he told you guys, I think, at Mesa, that Sinclair is 100% on board with Len and JD. And I do think that's a really important component to this when you're looking at people trying to find the channel
or, you know, kind of wrapping their arms around something different. You need two guys who've been in your home for years, who are really hardworking guys. They've got great relationships. They're, you know, anti-divas. They get along with everyone, you know, behind the scenes that'll be, you know, producing these games and putting the marquee network together. But certainly that's something that they'll have to navigate. And, you know, in the course of our reporting, it did sound less of like the Cubs, you know, looking at a huge whiteboard and trying to program 24/7 to now Sinclair obviously has these contacts. They have a lot of experience in this space. And, you know, to be honest, I think it would be overwhelming for the Cubs to you start something from scratch. And Sinclair is going to have to, you know, kind of pull its weight and make this happen.
So Patrick Mooney of The Athletic, he has done some of the reporting here on the Marquee Network, the Cubs' new broadcast channel, where you'll find their games next season. I know you wrote the thing, so you don't need it read back to you. For those who missed it, the quote from Crane Kenny is, "These additional resources are available immediately next year. From the team's perspective, the rights agreement they've got in place with Marquee will give them more resources next year than they had today." There's a whole bunch of money coming in. Is any of that available now? I feel like a teenager with his first credit card, but like, can you spend some of this now with the influx of cash that is going to come? Does that mean that this season gets any kind of a boost?
To answer your Craig Kimball question, no, that is not my understanding. And even with that answer, there was some nuance and clarification to it that certainly the fixed rights fee, what they know coming in the door next year, is going to be higher on a per game basis, because otherwise, you know, why would they do this? They're obviously in this to make more money. There is the variable element, though, of making sure this channel is on a basic cable tier with, say, Comcast, you know, the same entity the Cubs said, you know, thanks but no thanks to. When they're talking about this existing partnership in Chicago. So, you know, down the line, as this media landscape keeps changing, I get why the Cubs wanted to kind of bring all of their inventory in-house and have a lot more kind of oversight and a bigger hand, you know, in this. And certainly down the road, they're expecting to make, you know, tons of money. That's why they're in this. But a part of this equation is predicated upon making sure they are on that basic tier and they get kind of those sub fees on a year-to-year basis. So my question is more on when, because I was thinking along with you, Connor. It won't be until this kind of coming off season heading into 2020, and there's still kind of pieces of the puzzle that Sinclair, the Cubs, and these cable distributors still have to piece together.
Who sells it? Is this going to be one of these deals where if the Cubs sell a broadcast package, they get 70 and Sinclair gets 30? Sinclair sells a package, they get 70. Cubs get 30. Is it all Sinclair salespeople, all Cubs salespeople? How does it work?
At this point, I think you'll see some hires coming, you know, on the horizon of people that will be kind of responsible for marketing and sales. And I think the sales side is something where, you know, you see all the advertisements slapped all over Wrigley. They have relationships here in the city, and the Cubs will kind of leverage that. But you know, this truly is a partnership. You know, Sinclair obviously sees, you know, a future in the cable business. They don't see the bubble bursting quite yet. They thought those Fox RSNs were an undervalued asset. I think if, you know, my Google search Wikipedia was pretty good, that it looked like, you know, those networks might be fetched $20 to $25 billion, and they got it for about $10 billion. And this is part of, you know, a big part of Sinclair's strategy, that they see local news and live sports events as kind of the DVR proof unique content that you can make money off of. And we'll see, you know, kind of where they go.
Do we know, Patrick, for sure? Has it been? We know that they've hinted that this wouldn't be the case. They've tried to reassure that this wouldn't be the case. But have they explicitly taken off the table the possibility that Sinclair's sports properties will also be repositories for their political must-run segments?
I think Crane was on your show. He was definitely on The Score, I think, saying how what they have the tennis channel,
right?
Watch Stadium. Obviously, there's Fox News and MSNBC, and certainly those media companies can produce live sports. I don't know. Can they make that promise? I mean, what commercials are we going to see? I think it's something that, you know, fans, viewers, media people will certainly be watching and can hold them accountable for. I do think that the Cubs, after you guys talked about this on your show seemingly every other day, of all these off-the-field issues and non-baseball topics, I think from a Cubs perspective, they would prefer to not have that be part of the daily viewing experience and the conversation about the Cubs in the middle of a pennant race. But we'll see, right? I mean, who knows?
After Len and JD, do they have a sense of who they want to be the face of this new network, or faces, perhaps?
I think that's certainly something they've been thinking about for a long time. Obviously, with David Kaplan staying with NBC, that was kind of an obvious natural candidate. If you're looking at pre- and post-hosts, sideline reporters, there's certainly people in town that I'd imagine they'll be looking at. And also, from these 21 Fox RSNs that Sinclair is absorbing, I know that from on-air talent, to really kind of the entire TV newsroom, any department you'd have in a media company, I do think that there'll be talent that's kind of absorbed, and that obviously Chicago's a destination market. And if you're kind of working in the smaller city and always dreamed about working in Chicago, I mean, why wouldn't you? I do think you'll see some of those people, you know, migrating towards Chicago, but I mean, they got to get a lot of things in place before they're kind of announcing that.
It's a big deal. It's a big change to the sports broadcasting and viewing landscape that's going to affect all of us. And Patrick Mooney of The Athletic has been out in front with a lot of the info. Thanks for taking the time today, Patrick.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Patrick Mooney of The Athletic, the bottom of the hour, brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And this segment is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. It is time now to get ready for the midday midway.
That it is.
I love inventions. I brought you one yesterday.
Yeah,
we had
you
a
did.
Very
Thanks
special
for that,
time.
By the way.
Yeah, talking about cool tech yesterday. Well, I have a new airplane that is going into production that is
an airplane for your balls.
Yes, it's an airplane to cool your balls. I also have an invention designed to help people in a summer activity I will never, ever, ever understand. It is one of the things I would least want to do, yet people love to do it and spend a lot of money doing it.
We got to talk a little Game of Thrones because the ball-cooling underwear set us back a few minutes yesterday. We will also get to a story about Gene Simmons being banned for life. The Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
First half of the show featured talk about last night's Cubs game and a little playoff feel to it. Some punctuated moments in that baseball game.
If the season ended now, those would be your matchups.
Yeah.
The Cubs and the Phillies. It doesn't end now, though. Months more of baseball.
Blown save from a bullpen that's had already too many of them this year. And baseball talk continued with Joe Sheehan and Patrick Mooney. Some base inside baseball stuff, some inside Cubs business stuff.
We did not get to it yesterday, so it gets top billing for me today in the midday midway. No, it's not a pair of underwear that cools your boys. It is instead Game of Thrones. Our watch has ended. It is over. It is all over. And I got to be honest. Did it peg the meter for you at all the other night on Sunday night? Nothing. No checks. No Twitter. Nothing.
I don't know.
Genuinely interested. No, seriously, genuinely interested in whether or not it moved the meter for you at all because of how large a phenomenon it was.
I wasn't a part of my life at all.
Despite a handful of people being not interested in it, most of the world watched the thing. And I thought the season, really, the biggest explanation, the biggest apology, the biggest thing that HBO and Bang, all those guys owe to Game of Thrones fans is explaining why the season lasted 6 episodes. That was clearly the biggest issue at hand, more than plot holes, more than characters' lines, ending and deaths and whatnot. They've got to explain. They owe it to tell people why it was 6 episodes long.
It was like 6 movies, like full-length movies in length. So it wasn't the same as what they had been in the past.
It's true.
But it did feel a little rushed. I feel like they could have satisfied a lot more people. And like I said yesterday on Leftovers, I was basically satisfied. I was disappointed with some of the cheesiness that they used, some of the heavy-handedness.
Yeah, there was some cheese.
But with a little more time, maybe 2 more episodes, they could have answered a lot more questions, I think, and satisfied a lot more people.
They really could have. I mean, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. If you have, and likely everybody who wants to has gone to see the thing. It's the Tyrion thing, Jay. The guy walks up on the stage with all of the lords and ladies of Westeros to anoint a king. He gets told to shut up. Then continues talking for 20 minutes and decides the next form of government for the rest of the realm. It's insane.
Seems legit.
Yeah, that's the way that works. That's the way, hell, he should just decide for
us. You can just change the rules of government in a really quick time.
Yeah, whenever you feel like it. Whenever you feel like it. Just start a war. Do that whole thing. Anyway, that's Game of Thrones.
Tomorrow, Dan and I will review Game of Zones on the midway.
That's a bigger part of my life.
Actually, that'd be great.
A wonderful essay by David Foster Wallace about cruise ship vacations was called A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again. It was also the name of a book, a compilation of his essays that was a foundational text for me. And I will never take a cruise. I referred to it as a supposedly fun thing I will never do. Same goes for summer music festivals. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get the being around that many, the sweaty people, the rain.
You work with Jay and I.
The expense, the transportation, and then it's like a buffet where you get confused. What do I say? Am I doing it wrong? If I eat this, there's no room on my plate for this. Trying to make sure everything is just right that you hear it. It sounds like a nightmare, a complete nightmare. If I want to go to a concert, I can go to a concert. But the idea of a music festival, I find a little scary and pretty much awful, because then it rains on you and you're muddy and electrocuted and all that.
Yeah, well, that's
so. Here is a product that has come out to help you if indeed this is something you are going to do and head to a summer music festival. When I was a kid, when businessmen would go off to work in the rain, they would put over their shoes something they called rubbers.
Yep.
And they were usually made by totes, and it was an overshoe, a rubber overshoe to protect your lawyerly wingtips. And it was a thing. Where are my rubbers? And then it's you snicker. Rubbers. He said rubbers. Well, guess what? There's now a shoe condom for music festivals. A literal rolled-on condom that fits over the entire shoe right up to mid-ankle. And these are being sold right now in England. They cost £8, which is approximately $16. They're sold by Firebox. Waterproof, dirtproof, machine washable, and dishwasher safe. Latest fad to hit the festival circuit, promising to keep your sneakers, or trainers as they call them, pristine through mud and mess and rain.
And now they're see-through, yes?
Yep.
I assume, because wearing that fashion out to these concerts, you know, that's whether you're wearing a Sean Kemp Seattle Sonics jersey like every other white kid there, or whether you're wearing, you know, some sort of shoe that you've got to show up. Maybe it's the Sean Kemps from the 90s, too. You've got the whole matching outfit. You've got to be able to let people know what you're wearing. Otherwise, what's the point of going and getting high at this summer festival?
No remedy for getting mud caked in every nook and cranny of your Fila disruptors. Try getting those precious Air Max 97s even half as vibrant as they were fresh out of the box. Impossible, but these ingenious shoe condoms will keep you from ruining your beloved shoes.
So, I'm all about follow-ups here on Midday Midway. And one of them, you'll remember a few weeks ago, maybe like 2 months ago, told you a story about an Oregon father who was arrested for stealing about $700 from his daughter's Girl Scout cookie fund.
Yes, no, this is one of my favorite things about the Midday Midway are the long threads.
Oh yeah, no, this is great. So remember, this Oregon father had, you know, his daughters in the Girl Scout troop, and I don't think he was, you know, troop leader or anything. And I know there's a rank for that, right? You're a scout leader, Girl Scout troop. Anyway. Brian Couture was arrested, sentenced Monday to 18 months probation, 80 hours community service, and restitution as part of a plea deal with Washington County District Attorney's Office. The 40-year-old had been accused of lying to police. That's the other thing. He took the money and then lied about it when he called 911 and claimed his house had been broken into. When officers arrived, they found the home ransacked and spotted blood strewn about the residence. This is all as this guy, Couture, is framing somebody else for his theft of about $700 in Girl Scout cookie money. Turns out he used the money for an erotic massage. The guy took the money.
A $700 erotic massage?
And went out and got himself an erotic massage. Faked the robbery when he couldn't explain the missing funds. Way to go, buddy. Real smart move. You have now been featured on the Midday Midway twice.
And he now owns the Patriots. Meet Hermias Corporation. And if that doesn't sound like something from a Marvel movie, it's not. It's real. It's an aerospace company called Hermias Corporation. It is based in Atlanta, a startup, and it plans to develop a plane that will travel at Mach 5, transporting passengers between New York and London in 90 minutes.
Whoa, how many passengers?
They have obtained finance from seed funders and private investors. The plane will travel 5 times the speed of sound. Currently, travel takes more than 7 hours between London and New York. They hope the aircraft will be capable of a range of 4,600 miles with a cruising speed of 3,300 miles per hour. The Hermias founders include former employees from SpaceX, that is Elon Musk's rocket startup, and Blue Origin, that is the secretive space venture of Jeff Bezos. All 4 founders worked together at Generation Orbit, where they worked on the development of a hypersonic rocket plane and the U.S. Air Force's newest X-plane. They're using scramjets to do this hypersonically. They say experimental. They've got a long way to go, but the biggest challenge they're saying is propulsion, but they've got a lot of flying to do, but they think they can do it. Rethinking how we develop vehicles that operate in this environment, so we have a lot of hardware. We're going to fly it early so we can learn and iterate quickly.
That's awesome.
How about that?
I thought you said the Herbius Corporation at first. All they do is calculate fan ERA and hire Illini grads.
I'm not taking that plane. So I'm just going to read this as best I can. It's a bizarre story. The headline reads from The Guardian: Fox News bans Kiss frontman Gene Simmons for life.
Why?
Kiss frontman Gene Simmons, until this week, a favorite guest on Fox News, which I was unaware of, couldn't get enough as his supposedly outrageous rock star antics mixed with conservative politics has been banned for life from the cable channel. Fox finally had enough of Simmons after he crudely insulted female Fox staffers, taunted them, exposed his chest, and otherwise behaved like the demon character he plays on stage.
He's an old Jewish man.
Management was not amused, and Simmons' photograph was promptly posted Wednesday at the security entrance of the company's Manhattan headquarters, along with a do not admit advisory. See, he's like, he's ancient. They yes. banned an ancient man from their premises.
And he sounds like Jackie Mason, which is the best part.
He was, I guess he was, they were doing some sort of segment on one of the shows about the Harvey Weinstein sexual misconduct scandal.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he goes on to say the lunatics have taken over the asylum, and it's I'm a powerful and attractive man.
But you're not allowed to slap a woman on the ass right. anymore. So, what the hell's going on today with this PC crap?
According to a source, Simmons showed up on the 14th floor to do a book interview with the entertainment section, but instead barged in on a staff meeting uninvited. Hey, sue me, he shouted, and then pulled open his red velvet shirt. Good luck.
What is this velvet? This is beautiful. What a fabric. It's not just some schmata.
Then started telling Michael Jackson jokes, then bopped two employees on the head with his book, making,
with his dong.
Making comments about their comparative intelligence according to the sound their heads made when struck. It was pretty severe. That is what got Gene Simmons.
That's worth it, man.
Banned for life from Fox News. We live in weird times.
That is the Midday Midway, and that is going to lead us right up to a baseball conversation with another giant pulsating baseball brain belonging to Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. He was at Cubs and Phillies last night. A lot to talk about, a lot of points. We had some baseball business. We're going to do some baseball with Sahadev. And after that, you know what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Bears list!
God, settle down.
No, go Bears! Yes!
The McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.